I think every project is almost like birthing a baby and having them go to college, right? And so you put your heart and soul into it over 6 to 9 months and you set it free to the world.
Win all in, play my cards right.
This podcast exists because of the team at CASCM. At CASCM, we make content creation enjoyable. We are on a mission to help leaders create content, content that will improve lives, content to be proud of, content that fosters community. We know through firsthand experience how content brings people together, and we love helping make that happen. We produce podcasts, short-form videos, blog posts, and other written works, while also providing support in website development, social media management, and strategic planning. And we would be excited to help you. Visit CASCM.com to learn more, or feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn or Twitter.
Where are you right now, Sean?
I'm in a town called Windermere, Florida, or it's Orlando, basically. Yeah.
Okay. Is that where you live, or are you just on location?
I originally from Chicago, but I've been in Orlando most of my life. So.
Okay.
So yeah.
Okay. Very cool. Are you in your industry? Are you out in California a lot? In New York City?
Yeah, we used to have a huge 20,000 square foot office in Burbank and had another 20,000 square foot office here. And so I would literally be on a plane every Monday morning. I'd fly to Burbank and then back Wednesday. And so that was my life for quite a while. But
got it. Yeah. And you work with your wife, is that right? Did I put two and two together? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
How's that? Obviously good.
It was awesome. That's how we met, actually. So my wife and I started in TV at a really young age, at like 16. I was working full-time in television.
Yeah.
Had a very non-traditional path. She came from the MTV world. So she used to work at MTV, was a producer there. And then we met, she started the company originally, and her and I got together and built it up.
Yeah.
I think I grew up working with family most of my life. So I already knew the ups and downs of that, but she's great. I'm very lucky that we're best friends and business partners, and we balance each other out, like very distinct strengths and weaknesses that benefited us. And so we just sort of,
A lot of people can't, right? And some people do it all the time, and it creates a lot of problems for people for sure. But it sounds like with your travels and the things, like, you don't have to be working side by side all the time. You might be on the other side of the country and all is good. And that probably gives you some, I don't know if the word's not balance, but it gives, you're doing your thing, I guess.
For sure. I think when you have distinct lanes, I think it's a lot easier to, like, our skill sets were different, what our contributions, and we both had that respect of what we didn't have that there is. Other one had. And so I think the family businesses, I've seen that where there's too much overlap, that's where you get a lot of that, those struggles and problems.
Now, do you have kids?
Yeah, we have four kids.
You have four kids?
Yeah.
Okay. So how is that in that industry, right? And you're like, when you're on a project, I would imagine it's long hours, and it's probably up and down. Like sometimes you're just all in and it's like you're gone for weeks, and other times you're like, have plenty of time and maybe I'll never get another job. You always hear that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like taking that for how I just said it, like what's it been like?
I think with every kid, there's less time, obviously, and especially for her, she bears the brunt of that more than I did. And so I think it sort of evolved when, you know, back in the heyday, we were doing a ton of shows at one point, and with every kid evolved, and we scaled the business up to have these sort of two offices. And there was this point we realized we're like, wow, we're doing twice the amount of shows. We're not necessarily making twice the amount of money because we hadn't crossed that point yet where we were just at the tipping point. We're like, the lifestyle we had at that point, I was traveling back and forth. We said, we got to rebalance this. So the closer we got to the fourth kid, we sort of restructured the company and made it much more focused and brought the lifestyle back that we wanted with the family. So it was good.
So you all had some like awareness to be like, I'm not seeing the kids, for example, or I feel like I missed something. And then it's like, we need to do something with the business because it sounds like you all want to be around your kids.
Yeah, we do want to be around our kids. I don't think you're ever quite aware soon enough, right? So like, you're more aware looking back. You're like, this last year, these last 2 years, what are we doing? Like, you know, you learn a little too late, but yes, we were aware. I think we tried to catch it early enough and made some decisions to sort of reprioritize some things. And, you know, there's, you have to give up something at some end of the spectrum, right? You can't have the perfect family life and a massive business.
Absolutely. Well, it sounds like that's like the whole unscripted lifestyle. Like yeah. whether it's a show or life, you just roll with it and yeah. you figure things out. And you might never have expected that that whatever thing happens, and then it does. And it's like, well, do we carry on with that? Do we change it up? Like,
yeah.
it's no different than even having a podcast. When I first started in podcasting, I would have not script, but I would have questions, right? Yeah. I'd have things laid out, and there was always research involved. And there's always thinking through, oh, well, this is what I want to learn about this individual for myself, for my business, what have you. But it's the conversations, it's the unscripted aspect of life of a podcast that I'm fascinated by. And I'm imagining it's a lot of people, right? Mm-hmm. That's why the American, I remember watching The Real World, right? On MTV, yeah, and sure. you're like, whoa. What is this?
Yeah.
Like, this is not what we see. You know, we can watch game shows and we can get into sports, right? That for the most part, maybe it's unscripted. I don't know, right? There's yeah. still questions out there about that. But I remember Larry King talking about one of his favorite things is waking up in the morning, there's a ball game that night and you don't know who's going to win.
Yeah.
And there was some element of just passion he had about that. I was like, that's really cool. And I like that. And I think that's what you're talking about with your family, what you're talking about with what you do every day. I mean, obviously you see that as well. You kind of glow when you're thinking through those things.
Yeah, 100%. That's the beauty of, I think, working in this industry. It took a toll. There's a bunch of negative stuff about that industry, but I always tell people, I feel like I got to live 1,000 lives because I got to go alongside so many different people, so many subcultures, different aspects of things. And you learn how to go through life or embrace the unscripted nature of life, right?
Yeah.
And anytime you go into a story, going back to like what you said with a podcast, right? It's such a limitation. If you went into one with a predetermined outcome of what you thought this was going to be, you're going to leave so much gold on the table, right?
Yeah.
And so to sort of go into it and find the story as it unfolds is always the best, you know? And I think that's what separates all the great documentarians and over the years, the ones who go in. And I think the other interesting thing is the best stories in unscripted or documentaries is when people have gone into it thinking the story was one thing, right? They went into it with intent. You have to start with some nugget and it turns out to be the total opposite of what you thought. And those always make for some of the best stories I've seen.
Yeah, there was one, I remember early on, I was doing this podcast and it was a documentary this guy had done about sports cards in the 80s and how they, you know, lost all their value. And it was this whole thing, his family, and it was definitely like his father was going to be involved with it, or his father who wasn't around was going to be involved with it. So he went down this path to really discover why we all got screwed out of our baseball cards because Dunruss overprinted them, right? And the whole thing. And he definitely got to that point. It wasn't about that. It was about his relationship with his dad. And you're just like, at the end of it, you're like, oh, wow. Like, where did that come from? And he said it took a sharp left turn that he never expected it. And it's like, do I even air this? It got to that point of on that fringe of like, is this something I can talk about? And he did. And I'm glad he did. And I know he is as well.
Yeah.
So
100%.
It's interesting when you talk to a lot of people, like individuals, you randomly get on, you come across these people, you're like, well, I'm so glad we talked. Like I've had numerous of those conversations lately. And you're like, wow, that was amazing. But then there's always like someone out there and you see it with like TV shows or broadcasters in sports where they just, man, they have this chemistry together and you would just, it doesn't matter what they're talking about, you would just listen to it and you might not even be interested in it.
Yep.
And I love the long form podcast, hour plus, but they have to be someone where like the conversation just, you just feel, I don't know, you just want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
And I have that person, we've created this podcast and the one thing that people say is like, nah, there's just random chemistry. Like you guys can interrupt each other. You could talk about whatever. You can change topics. And we're here for all of it. Where you can't do that with everybody. Mm-hmm. And when you hear that word chemistry, it's like, well, that's a lot in relationships you hear that about. But when you go out to a show, and I was actually watching some of your shows, like I was watching Pool Kings and just kind of getting a feel for some of the and I've seen these in the past. When you're out there and you're seeing the show, like when do you know it's like, oh, we got something. Like there's this chemistry that these two people have or this group of people have. And is it just, I mean, it's like intuitive. I don't know, but that chemistry thing seems to be such a big deal in any show, right? But specifically in when something's totally unscripted.
Yeah. Well, I think there's two sort of metrics for that, right? One is what makes the show super successful from a ratings perspective, right? And then there's also the magic of creating something. So we did the series for MTV once, and it was one of the coolest shows we did. It was about two brothers who were the top wakeboarders in the world, number one and number five. And the number five was the younger brother who could care less about life and lived. And the older brother was methodically, I mean, they were polar opposites. And the older brother owned a house, they lived together. the chemistry in the show is so mind-blowing. And the show did one of the worst ratings. MTV thought it was going to be the best hit they ever had.
Yeah.
And it didn't work. It didn't work. And there's a bunch of reasons and theories what MTV has about that. And then on the same time, you have these other shows that you do feel that magic and gold. I guess to answer the core of your question is, it really has to do with people being genuinely authentic, right? Because when I'm filming with people and we cross over that, there's always a window. You never start there. You have to earn that and get them to a place where they can really feel comfortable and normal and they forget you're there. When you get to that and you got people being very genuine and real and authentic, that's really the magic. Mm. As soon as you get that, you could do a lot with it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's hard to do. It's very hard, especially when you got, you know, 15 people running around your world following you around. But yeah, that's the magical part when you see that.
Yeah. That's what he brought up about you thinking and MTV thinking this is the show, like we got one, like this is going to be a hit, and then it flops. And then I'm sure you have other ones like, I don't know about this one. And then it probably does well. I mean, you have stories on the other end of it. You're like, I don't know about this.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. We did a show, CMT. We did a series one time called it was a couple different iterations of it, but it started off My Big Redneck Vacation.
Yeah.
And at the time, our production company was based in Florida. Our headquarters were here. And this is back in the early days of production companies. There was maybe a dozen of us on scripted companies in the country doing the stuff. And we were one of the few that were not in New York or LA. And the networks would always tell us they thought we had an interesting take on Middle America because we weren't telling the story from the coastal perspective. We were telling it from sort of their perspective, and they were the heroes of the shows versus sort of being mockery of the show, right?
Sure.
Oh, the mockery of the piece. And so this show we did, the premise was great. It was a family that never left Louisiana. It was a large family, and we took them and put them in the Hamptons for a summer. And it turned out to be the highest rated show in CMT history. Went on to like huge, huge like spinoffs and all these other versions. And I knew we had something there, but I didn't know how big that was going to be. I would never have guessed it was going to do what it did.
Yeah.
And it was the beginning of a whole new movement. And it was really heartwarming. Oh, it was a powerful show, actually.
Yeah.
You would think of this title as a trashy show. It was not a trashy show at all. It was like the end of that season was the people in the Hamptons who called the cops on them when they arrived with their RV to park in the driveway, threw them a going away party.
That's amazing.
And like it was tears and hugs. And I mean, it was a really powerful show.
Yeah. When something like that happens and you don't know how it's going to be received, right? You don't know it's going to set records and be the highest rated show. And I'm sure you want both, right? You want like, I know we have something and it does well. In the creative space, and you hear this a lot, right? You create a podcast, you write a book, you do a movie, a documentary. Do you have this where you feel, man, I just loved it. And whatever happens from here, I have no control. It may have some control, like I can go on a PR tour and I can do all of these things and I have connections, what have you. Like when you get into that creative space, are you okay if the show doesn't do well? I mean, obviously you need it. You have four kids, you got a family, you have new projects you want to work on, but how do you take that?
I think every project is almost like birthing a baby and having them go to college, right? And so you put your heart and soul into it over 6 to 9 months and you set it free to the world and you know you did everything you wanted to do and you fought all the fights to make it the best it was. And then you just wait and see. You learn really quick in this industry that the ratings are not necessarily the metric you go by for was this a good show or successful, because it's really unpredictable and it's really crazy. And there's a lot of things outside of your control with marketing and where they program it and what's the lead in. And I mean, there's so many other factors that go into it.
Yeah.
But I think that was part of the trick of being successful was you didn't really worry about that. You just tried to make stories that connect people and didn't listen to the noise. And I think that's the other layer too, Eric, is the industry became very iterative, right? So originally in the unscripted space, you had a bunch of former producers working at the networks that like were all about taking swings and like, let's try something new. And it was a lot freer of a place to create, you know, shows. Look at MTV, the evolution of MTV by itself, right?
Yeah.
And then as they become part of larger companies and organizations, it becomes very data number driven. Understandably, I understand the premise of where they're coming from. But the poor network execs, I think, live in fear more of like trying to make good bets. And so it's like, in order to do something, something has to be proven before it in some way. And so you get less swings and more iterative content. Now, Netflix changed that a lot. They had a different approach and some of the streamers brought back some of that for sure. But yeah.
Yeah. How do you feel about it today? I mean, ratings are interesting because, and you could explain this better than I understand it, but with ratings and then, and sometimes, you know, you don't get like, and I keep going back to sports as an example, because that's a huge thing. Like, oh, how did this game do versus this game? And then versus these shows that were out there. And then if it's being streamed, well, I could have watched that game on ESPN, but I also could have streamed it on ESPN. So where do the numbers align? It's like, well, that didn't have the numbers. Like, yeah, but 500,000 people watch it on the ESPN app on their phone in an undisclosed mm-hmm. location. I don't know. So how do you balance all of that, right? Because it's just a different era that we're in with TV.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to be in the network. Cable TV side of it, like everything's shifting.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody knows quite where it's going to land, but we all know we're in the middle of a huge shift.
Yeah.
And everybody's trying to reinvent themselves and find that new path. And I think some are finding it quicker than others, but I don't think we've arrived at the official new, you know, like
right.
this is what it looks like for network and cable TV.
Yeah. It's confusing too. It's just like, even so, I go find a show, I can go to the HGTV Plus app. I could go to YouTube TV, which has two seasons of Pool Kings on it, right? And other than Hulu might have it and all these things. And you're opening up different apps and it maybe takes some time or it's not as streamlined as it was. But once you're in the app of your choice, I mean, it's all right there. It's all access. Like, I guess on both sides of it, as a consumer, how do you feel about the process right now? And being on the other side of it and like part of the industry as it relates to streaming, like, what do you think? Like, where are we? Like you said, we don't know where, but what are your predictions on that?
Yeah, I think there's one more layer to that equation you just laid out, which is you can have the guy that is in Pool Kings go and just whip together his own show on YouTube and get more views than he potentially the show on HGTV got.
Right.
Right. And for way less money and cost. And so I think that's the most disruptive part of the content equation is not the networks going from the linear outlets to, you know, sort of the streaming in their own app base, which is a huge step.
Sure.
But it's how do you deal with user-generated content and the numbers those are driving and where the eyeballs are?
Like,
you know, the younger generations, they're not on the HGTV. I mean, HGTV is a different demo, but like, you know what I'm trying to say? They're, ESPN's a unique animal because it's sports and it's all live and it's whatever. But, you know, the user-generated content is really driving the bus right now. And I think what I predict is, and part of what one of the layers of why I built this company is to sort of connect those two things to be able to bring what happens on the professional side into the user generated so that you can up level user generated content and bring, you know, bring sort of a different layer to it and help people who are not creators be creators basically.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Podcasting is a perfect example of people who weren't creators. They can become bloggers, writers, like all these things. Like you have a story to share. Like you think you don't. Go think back to the conversations you've had, the emails that you've sent, the presentations that you've given, the things that you read and think about. Like everyone does have a story. It's when you talk about YouTube, it makes me think, so you're 16 and I saw something about the Mickey Mouse Clubhouse.
Yeah, that was my first show.
Were you on the show? Were you like, what were you doing with that show?
I technically started part-time when I was 15 working on Mickey Mouse Club. I was on the crew side, although I was the age of the kids.
Yeah.
So I socially hung out with the kids, but I was on the crew side.
Jeez, yeah.
And when I was 16, I started working full-time. I worked in the art department first. I literally got to work in almost all the departments by the time that show ended. So
yeah,
art department, construction, camera department, you name it. But yeah, I was just coming up in the industry. It was the best thing ever happened to me because I got to learn the basics of every department.
How do you end up on that show at 16?
So I don't want to get my uncle in trouble, but my uncle was one of the producers of the show. My dad was the construction coordinator of the show. And my dad used to be in construction. So I grew up with a tool belt on since I was 8 years old, helping him labor jobs and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so on a weekend, I had somehow gone with my dad to work, walked on the set. And I was like, this is amazing. Yeah. I want to do this. At the same time, my mom decided to homeschool me and my three younger brothers.
Wow.
I was like, bingo. I'm like, I can do high school on the weekends.
Yeah.
I asked my uncle, I'm like, please. And I looked older for my age and I acted probably a little bit older and could hang with adults because I had spent most of my life around adults. And so they changed some things so I could work adult hours and was working 60-hour weeks and doing high school on the weekends and had the time of my life. And I just kept going. I got to the end of that and the producers of the show, I was like, I don't know, should I go to college? Where they're like, if you go to college, you're going to spend 4 years and you're going to go back to where you started. Like, you don't need it for this. I was like, okay, great. So I just kept going.
Man. So in that time too. And I guess like if you're in that industry, that was the difference, right? Like somehow if you're in Hollywood or if you're working on TV sets or movie sets, that's the difference. But
yeah,
you hear from so many people, especially entrepreneurs, it's like they watched their dad or go off and they were a lawyer, they were a teacher, they did this job, they worked from a certain hours. And then you hear from like someone whose dad was an author or a writer. They wanted their dad to be, can you just be like the other dads that are doing these things? And then it comes time for the kid, which you'd obviously had different experience because you were homeschooled and you just found some passion and probably just like blocked everything else out and just went forward. But the idea is like, where are you going to college? What are you going to study? What are you going to be? And your career is going to be the next 40 years of your life. And that's what you're going to do. And you'd mentioned this before, each project is almost like its own career. People don't have careers anymore. They have projects, they have jobs, and they maybe 10-year career max. And I mean, I look at myself, we had an insurance brokerage company and built that. And then all of a sudden started creating content. I was like, well, I want to do that. And I want to have a podcast. So we can still have the insurance business and generate revenue. And then people in those industries are like, no, no, you can't do that. Like, that's not allowed. And like, that allows you to push even more in that direction. But when you're at that point and during that time, when that's just not a normal thing to think through, but I guess maybe it's because you were surrounded by the industry and the right people to say, do what, here, you know, continue down this path.
Yeah, yeah. Neither of my parents went to college. So I actually grew up in a house where college wasn't at the forefront of like being shoved on from them.
Man.
All my friends were going to college though. And I had a weird friend life because I was homeschooled. So I still went to proms and homecoming, but I was working full time making money.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Like, best of both worlds, right? Yeah.
And so they're all going to college and I'm like, I'm going to not go to college with you guys and just keep running down this path. And the industry as a whole is, you know, I know there's a huge shift happening right now with the way younger people view college, especially young men, it seems statistically, right? But so the TV industry is a really unique industry where depending on what you're going to do, I mean, I'm not trying to knock college, either you get a lot of great stuff out of college, but if you have a foot in the door, if you have good work ethic and you can grind, like you can find your way in there. People aren't really checking your college resume to see if they're going to put you on a project or show or not.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just having a conversation with someone who she was working in security, IT security at a bank and now working with one of the large software companies.
Yeah.
And she hires a lot and she's not even looking at where they went to college. Could care less. And, you know, sometimes they'll look at like what they studied and how they did or that they went to college, but she's like, not even anymore. Now, like away from the bank side of it, they don't care.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to do something though. So I'm sure like if your option was, I don't want to go to college, I don't know what I'm going to do. That would probably have been a different conversation with your parents.
Different conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think if you don't know what you want to do, it's a good foundation to learn and to explore in college and try out certain things. I think the beauty of content and YouTube and all this stuff is you can learn so much stuff now.
It's crazy.
You don't have to go to college to learn.
Yeah.
I mean, like, information's everywhere.
Yeah.
Like if you're passionate about something, you can go learn and master it, you know, on your own or find these alternative educational methods. So.
Yeah. We have a lot of kids now, like that people would think it would be crazy. Maybe a few years ago, it's changing a little bit, but not all the way. You know, YouTube's like, I want to be a YouTuber, right? That wasn't a thing that long ago. So I want to be a YouTuber.
Right.
And they're going to their parents, I want to be a YouTuber. Great. I don't want to go to college. I just want to work on this. And no doubt someone could prove it to say, oh, they have a lot of followers. You're actually making money from it. You're learning production. Yeah. You're learning audio. You're learning branding. I mean, there's like, it's amazing how to write properly, how to reach out to people and have conversations with people of all age brackets. You know, for that person, I guess it's so individualized and they want to do it on their own. Like, I don't want to go in the same side of the industry that you've been in, dad, or whatever person that might be. But if someone wants to try their hand and become a YouTuber, you know, I think back and maybe to finish that question is when you're 16 and your YouTube, let's say, comes around and like the internet is a thing and you're coming out, you've had 2 years experience, you know what you're doing, you're 18, I want to be a YouTuber. Like, do you think that would have been something along the lines of you would have been fascinated by that probably too, to say, I could go take this and have my own show and my own network living on the YouTube channel? Like, when I say all that, what comes to mind for you?
Yeah. You know, my personality, I don't think I would have been drawn to that because I think it takes real special people to, you know, to be a YouTuber is very difficult. It may seem easy, but it's creating content that can find an audience to connect with. Like, I can do it for other people better than I can do it for myself. So I can help somebody go, here's what's really fascinating about you and your world. And here's how this audience would really relate to that.
Right.
I can help someone be authentic and genuinely convey that. But for me, I didn't live enough life to even think about where I would have started with that. Right?
Yeah.
I think, like, you know, now it'd be easier. I'd be like, oh, do a podcast on Unscripted. I could do, you know, or you do something because you feel like you live life. But kudos to the people who just have this authenticity to them. And I think that's where the big YouTubers are, right? They just have a way of connecting with an audience in a really genuine way.
Yeah.
And when you look at the people who make success, even though it seems like there's a lot of YouTubers, it's a very small percentage of population that actually makes the content that people watch, you know?
Yeah.
It's a difficult thing to do.
Well, it's like a book, right? Yeah. It's like you listen to the authors. Yeah. There's a lot of books out there. It's very difficult to sell a book. I'm sure it's very difficult. How many TV shows and movies that never got made that are probably great, but for whatever reason.
For sure.
Yeah. And the work, I mean, they talk about all these shows, like the amount of effort that these people are putting in. I mean, you could look at OnlyFans and you hear the stories behind the scenes of like how hard these people are actually working to stay in shape, to do whatever. It's just mind blowing. And YouTube's just no different. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
So when did you, like, obviously when you got the bug for just production and being a part of that whole thing, the unscripted nature of shows, like, was there a show that you saw that's like took you down that path? Because it's different than being more of into that.
Yeah.
That's that time of Nickelodeon and the Mickey Mouse Club, right? That whole thing. Yeah. Like, was there a specific time that you can point to? And you reflecting back on it now, maybe you didn't know it in the moment to say, oh, wow, this is what I'm all about.
Yeah. I think there's two moments. One was we used to do a series for MTV called True Life, which I don't know if you remember that show back in the day, but it was a documentary series. It was an hour long episodes, just kids, MTV, a demo, living just unique lives. And so it would be an hour into it.
Yeah.
And to film one of those, we would spend 4 months, 5 months, sometimes longer, just like being with them and just raw docu style. And it was so incredible when you would go through that process and then create the output and you see the feedback from people connecting with that. Like, that show is a really powerful show where young people would respond to that. And it would be like this connection of, wow, it's not that I'm like that too. This exists. It's not just me. You know, like, it was this really powerful thing. That was the first moment of like, wow, like telling real people's stories in a way to connect with total strangers is a really powerful thing to watch play out. The second moment for me, epiphany, was doing the Hogan Knows Best show with Hulk Hogan and his family. And that was one of the best times of my career, I think, doing that show. And for that show, the epiphany or the moment for me was I got to relate to that show and that family because I was like, oh, there's so many things that are happening in their family. They're so relatable. And so for me to sit there and direct and produce and pull and find those stories, and that was a huge hit show back in the day for VH1, like to see the impact on a broader audience of like how you could take somebody that was this iconic wrestling figure that no one knew his personal life or could understand him as a dad or husband, they had no perspective on it, and connect, bring somebody down from the top of the mountain into your living room and make them relatable and connect with it.
Yeah.
So that was also one of those moments where you're like, this is a really cool thing. And I think the breakthroughs too, that I'll add a third thing. Anytime we would tell a story where people had a preconceived notion about a type of person or a specific person or a subculture, and you could flip it on its head and viewers would watch it and go, I had no idea. I always thought blank. I never knew blank, right? You feel like, oh, this is really cool. It helps sort of break down barriers and walls and stuff.
Yeah. You must have had like incredible relationships with these, like the Hogans, right? Yeah. To have, they're sharing these moments. Like obviously the audience is going to have it. So when we get to watch it on VH1 later on, like we can feel that connection, which is what you talk about with storytelling.
Yeah.
But actually being there and being a part of it, like you're not just getting what I get to see for that hour long show. Like you said, you have hours and hours of footage that you've had and heard where they're truly getting like, again, vulnerable. To then build that relationship, there's got to be trust in there to even go there in that type of conversation. So that must be incredibly rewarding for you to like meet these people, start here, and then you end up on this other path where like a lot of emotion.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of emotion.
It is. It's a very rewarding, powerful thing. You know, Brooke Hogan was at my house for Easter this year. Terry and I still, he was texting me last night. Like
that's cool.
To have relationships with these people, you're 100% right. It's a very intimate thing. You're asking people, and especially when they're celebrities you work with, the bar is a lot higher because they have a lot more walls up, understandably. I think anybody in that position does.
Yeah.
And so it's very, very vulnerable for them to let you in. And so you do have to build real genuine relationships with them and trust, improve over time and build that. And I'm very lucky. Like I can't, my career, when I look back and the experiences, it is like, it's incredible. Like the people you get to meet and the relationship you get to build. And it's not just like meeting somebody for dinner. Like when you're in their house
right.
for 4 months every, and then take a few months off and come back from the run, like you really are part of their families. And then I think the other part of it is, and part of where I think the unscripted industry did not do a great job is, it's easy to tell stories for ratings at the expense of the people in the show, right?
Mm.
You can flip an angle really quickly and be like, oh, this would be really juicy. Like,
right, right.
You can do things that would be really bad and you may get a bigger rating pop, but you destroy relationships and you could really, really destroy people along the way.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of the fact that I'm still friends with basically everybody we ever did shows with. And
this says a lot.
Yeah. The industry evolved so much where there was such a need for content. Unscripted blew up. It dominated scripted for a long time from as far as quantity of hours that were being produced. And there was a huge need for people to make that content.
Yeah.
And I think the old school people who built that industry, those values and approaches shifted to like, hey, we don't have the budget anymore. You have to do something you'd normally be able to spend 2 weeks filming a 22-minute episode. It started where you have 3 months. Then it was like, okay, you got 2 weeks. That's right. What you still do. But now you have 2.5 days. You have to do 2 episodes a week.
Jeez. Yeah.
And you got people, you know, it gets crazy and they're trying to shoehorn story in and angles in and it gets real.
It's not the same. We had someone working here and he had, oh, how many kids did he have? It was a lot. 6, 8, whatever. He didn't have the kids. He was one of the brothers. And they had, what's like a nanny show? I can't remember the name of it. I'll think of it later. But
Nanny 911.
Yeah, something along those lines. And he remembers when he was a kid, them filming the show and how they tried to create his brother and the dad, like have this animosity to like just continue to fight. So they became the stars of the show. As a kid, he could feel the angle being played that it wasn't that. Like that wasn't a real thing in their family.
Yeah.
But there was like maybe a moment. And like you said, and they leaned into it. And so that's what a lot of people have when it gets into the reality TV that, and there's so many different types of those shows, right? And there's these angles being pushed and like, to your point, like there are, and then there's also, there's not. And I think it's up to us as a viewer to say, what do we like? What don't we like?
Yeah.
But you've done it the right way and obviously build long-term relationships with these people that get you back into doing more projects, I would imagine.
Yeah, 100%. And I think everybody has stories. And everybody has these things going on underneath.
Yeah.
And so what I think it's a symptom of is sometimes it's laziness and producers not spending the time to dig in to finding the real goods that are there to like say, okay, this is relatable. And then also developing the relationship genuinely with people so that they'll even open up to show that to you. You know, it's difficult to do. It takes time and but I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. Well, whether it's producing a show, there's these times that business is transactional, right? And I get it. At the end of the day, you need to make money. Like we talked about before, you need the show to do well so you can do the next one. And then there's these projects and it's hard. And you hear from actors talk about this a lot where they finish, they get paid at some point, and then they're not doing anything for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And you see an artist, that's difficult, right?
Yeah.
Do I need to go do something else for a while because I'm not going to make any money? But then you trust your craft, you trust your ability, you keep putting in the work, you put in the hours, you meet people, you connect with people. How have you seen that throughout your career? And maybe not necessarily advising other people in your industry, but just entrepreneurs in general to think through it, because not every business is selling widgets. A lot of times it's like a way bigger project. And, you know, it could be in podcasting, it could be whatever, it could be building some sort of business that eventually going to sell. But in the meantime, in those 6 months or 3 months or what have you, there might not be anything coming through. And that's difficult. And maybe it's more psychological of how to go through that. Like, because I've even seen it in different businesses that I've been in. It's like, what have you done for me lately? Like, you have to continue to sell that product or you don't get paid.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a very transactional thing. It's not as rewarding. It's not as fulfilling, like not even close. Where you get into to have conversations like this to say, well, okay, what could that lead to? But just trust what you're doing. But in thinking through all that and looking at it from like the entrepreneurial side of your own business and talking to other entrepreneurs, how have you looked at that, you know, in your career?
Yeah. In our industry, there's a phrase that you hear a lot, which is you're only as good as your last show, right? You could have had it.
Yeah.
You could have had a hit of the century last year, but the show you just finished just tanked, right? And so you learn really quickly not to ride the highs and also not to ride the lows, right? And to have sort of a really good sense of self in what you're doing and why you're doing it, most importantly. And then also be open to, not open, but I think you have to be driven to constantly grow, right? Like, I think the best things in life for me, I think that I've learned from has all been the failures and those windows where you do question or you have these opportunities. And if you see them as an opportunity for growth and you invest the time to constantly making yourself better and learning, it never gets boring and you don't get stuck in those ruts too quickly, right? And I tell my daughter this all the time, like, I wish I learned this earlier to tell my older kids while they were so young. But every time something bad happens, I'm like, man, that's just part of your story. Like, because she asks me at night, she's really good. She like interviews me when I took her in. I make her ask me questions.
Yeah, I love it.
So I'm like, see, Zoe, this is part of your story now. When you're telling your kids this thing you just lived through, right? Like now this is it wasn't super embarrassing or this was super, you know, but look at now, like how you deal with it now and how you overcome it, how you do it is going to make part of your story. So I think, and for entrepreneurs, I think if you look at things, it's just like, it's going to be high, it's going to be low. What are you doing? Why are you doing it? Have a really good anchor in that and just never stop growing and just learn, iterate and enjoy the ride.
Yeah. Oh, man, I love that. It's part of your story to write that down because it's true. I mean, I think what you're saying, you're constantly reminding yourself of that.
Yeah.
So when we talk to our kids, I always feel like sometimes we're talking to ourselves, right?
Yeah,
like
for
it's
sure.
Just
for sure.
It's a way to get through. What projects are you working on now or what projects are upcoming that you're excited about?
Well, I haven't, you know, we stepped away from the TV thing a few years ago when I built Orson because I had this epiphany, Eric, after doing this for like 20, 25 years now, I'm like, man, I am like the carpenter who fixes everyone else's house, but don't fix my own. I'm like, my camera roll on my phone is just like everybody else's. I've got the video I have is like kids running across the soccer field 50 yards away. You can barely tell whose kid is yours. Yeah. I've got kids blowing up birthday candles. I've got some like vacations, jumping into a pool or off into a river, you know, like things. But I don't have the story of my kids documented. Mm-hmm. I didn't, you know, this is going maybe 5 years ago when I first had this first epiphany. I'm not applying the skill set to my everyday life.
Yeah.
And so I said, I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. So I started doing mini docs, my 96-year-old grandmother, my father-in-law before he passed away. I started doing Mother's Day videos where I'd interview my four kids every Mother's Day and create this awesome piece for my wife, which I now have to do every single year because it's her favorite thing. And I started doing it all these ways. And I was like, and seeing the impact and the power it had on not just the people that were in the video or the video was for, but even friends of ours that would watch it and they're like, this is insane. I want to do this. I'm like, yeah, it's great. Except for this took me a ton of time because even though I know how to do this stuff really well, you know how content, it takes time. Like when you craft this stuff.
A lot of time.
In the unscripted world is like really time consuming because it's like it painting, you know, like where is this going? And you got to craft it. And so
yeah,
I was like, okay, there's a huge need for this. And I spent my life seeing the power of how stories can connect and transcend random strangers to have empathy and deep connection with each other, let alone deepening connection with people who knew each other, which by the way, I'm going to tell you a funny story on that in a second. And I was like, I have to figure out a way of automating and bringing a science to the art so that it can be scaled.
Yeah.
Because if we could do that,
yeah,
man, how cool would this be to help people convey their stories better or capture the stories of their loved ones, you know? And that's why we set out. So 3 years ago, I started building Orson to do that. And we figured it out and are just now getting ready to bring it to market. So it's been exciting.
Yeah. We talk about a lot, like I mentioned before, in the life insurance industry. It's the connection. It's the emotion. It's like the intention of what was set out. And there's so many stories to be told. Or I think about World War II. And World War II veterans they're dying, right?
Yep.
Like we're at that point and it's sad. And there's a lot of stories that need to be shared and told. And
yep.
You know, where they were and what they went through and what they saw and just these things that are passing on. And they are told, they're told in books, but I'm thinking, like you said, inside that family where they didn't write a book, they don't have a documentary about them. There's some backstory there, but like specifically a grandfather was a mailman in Korea. And it's like, okay, what was that like? And we want to understand what grandpa went through. And I think to what you're saying, I remember it's funny. I just had videos and I did it in one of her birthday videos. It's my middle child and daughter. And it was an interview with her when she was 3 years old. And it's just totally outrageous. And we always go back to it. And it's just so much fun to have that there. Mm-hmm. And to your point, put it inside of pictures and music and all, and like I mean, geez, you get the right person in the room and they're bawling their eyes out and they're laughing and they're doing all these different things. And I think there's just a lot that could be shared. And there's usually someone in the family that wants to share this stuff.
100%.
And I think what you're doing with Orson is, it's hard. Like you said, it takes a ton of time. When you just create a birthday montage video, you could slap something together, and Apple actually does it for you now. Like, you open up your phone, it's like, why is my phone playing music? And it's really cool. But to do it in your own way with your own pictures and your own music and your own thoughts around it, it does. It takes a lot of time, but it's fascinating. So I could see how having someone there to help you through it, it's no different than like someone's doing a podcast. It's like, hey, I could show you how to have a podcast up and running.
Yeah.
You can interview your first person or however you want to do it. And you could have that thing up in 5 minutes. But if you really want to take some time and put some effort into it and have the sound quality and all that stuff that goes with it and their unique experience, that's something different. Mm-hmm. You could pay someone to do it, just like they can get you to help them create, you know, have Orson come in and create the content, if you will. Because, I mean, there's so much content out there, but I feel like we still crave...
Oh, yeah.
We crave more content, especially our own.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the thing about like the montage thing, right? It's like... there's a ton of, and Apple does it fantastic. Facebook does it, right? Like you said, it creates these like, hey, you know, and there's a beautiful picture, but you don't have the story and the narrative of what people were thinking and their personality is and all this is captured, right? So like, imagine if you had done this and you could play a video when your kid turns 18 and it's a video of like their personality and the evolution of their personality and their story over time. Like my son just graduated high school, he's going to college. And I did an Orson episode with him where all of our family got asked like 5 questions about Oliver. And we put together this video, and it's everything from like the favorite moment that makes you smile and like talk about the past stuff to like advice and things for the future. And it was awesome. Like he's got this now piece of content that was like the whole family love it. And if you think about it, a graduation party doesn't do that, right?
Right.
If we would have had everybody, which we did, everybody's there. No one's sitting around communicating like this with each other, right? You don't share this kind of stuff naturally.
No.
And so what I found is the power of it is like interviewing and asking people, right? Well, listen, I'll tell you, one of my most favorite things to do in interviewing people for shows was if I had a couple, right, that was together and they were together for a long, long time, like an older married couple was some of the best interviews because they sit there thinking they know everything about the other person, right? And they're together for such a time, so you know there's a good foundation here. And to interview them, and I love asking them questions. And here's a couple that's been together for 30, 40 years. I'd ask a question, and the wife would be like, you think, what? I didn't know that. And he's like, I didn't know that. And I'm like, this is great. Yeah. And you leave the interview with this magical chemistry. I'm like, they had probably had a fantastic night when I left that room. Because like they felt like they got to meet each other again for the first time, right? And to go back to something you said about the stories of our parents and grandparents, if you think about it, like the stories maybe last about 2 generations, right? So like our grandparents' stories got passed on to our parents. And if we're lucky enough, we got to hear those directly from our grandparents. But they don't really carry much past. Like my kids know a little bit, you know, they only retain a little bit. They only got to meet two of the grandparents of the 4. And so like you lose that. And there's some really good statistics. Stanford did an awesome study about when you know where you came from in genealogy, the power of that in like your self-identity. And how cool would it be to be able to like watch documentaries of your great this and to sort of feel the connection and where that came from and the power of that. So it's a powerful thing. It's super cool.
Yeah. Okay. So for us to understand it, using Orson as you're building this or have built it, how does someone get involved with it? How do I take this and I want to do something along those lines? I don't have, you know, it's like technical ability someone might not have, or they don't know how to tell the story or craft the story and they need someone curating that whole thing. Like, how would that work?
Yeah. So the way Orson works is it's not an editing tool. You don't edit. From a user's perspective, you just get interviewed, right? So we create these, we call story strips. And story strips, it basically is the purpose of the content. So like I could do a show about you, Eric, for Discovery Channel. I could do one for CNBC or Food Network, right? It'll be the genuine you, but it's 3 totally different pieces of content for 3 different purposes and different audiences, right? And so what the story strips do is allow us to create sort of all of the things we would do for a piece of content and bake it in from the directors. And these are professional directors that come from the TV world directing. And then it takes your answers. It automatically assembles it with pictures and music and graphics for whatever that intended output is. And it spits you out an output that you get to see the finished thing. So from a user perspective, it's just being interviewed. You just select it.
Who's doing the interviewing? Is it just us at home doing the interviewing? Or are we talking to someone online?
It's a video interview. So the directors are pre-recorded inside Orson. And so it almost looks like this in the video podcast kind of thing. But
got it.
There's a director that asks you questions and primes you. And then you get to do as many takes as you want. And then you pick your take that you like the most. You go to the next one and we walk you through. So it's automated interview process that you go through. And then we take that and it sends you back a finished video or finished episode. The original technology was designed to, or we realized sort of the power of what we had done and that for us to bring this to market and to direct users would not be as fast as us plugging it into other platforms. Because if you can imagine this plugged into Ancestry.com or, you know, do Hallmark and do cards, like there's already platform partners that have the audiences. Let's just, we can build story strips for each partner to sort of embed this in to their technology to get it into more people's hands faster. But what we did launch is, or we're about to launch on in July 1st, is a thing called Story Shop, and it's at storyshop.ai. And Story Shop is a place where we're testing with direct end users specific use cases to learn, train the AI, because we use AI in the background of part of what we do.
Yep.
And so we're launching with Life Story. So Life Story is the first one that'll launch. And Life Story, basically, you can get it and send a link to your grandparent interviews, and it gets you about a 15-minute episode that is not an entire life story. I'd have to do like a 10-part series.
Right.
And we'll save that for a part. We'll do that with a partner. But it'd give you a really cool piece of content that tells your loved one's life. You know, we're going to do Love Story. We're going to test after that in August. And that's going to be around for couples who just got engaged before married, tells their love story. They could use it for a bunch of different purposes.
Yeah.
We've got some other ones in there for like businesses and stuff you could use inside a work environment. But we're using Story Shop to sort of test and learn and get feedback with users and to sort of drive some of the platform sales we're doing.
Yeah, I was going to say, as you're talking about it and the questions that Orson's giving, like how is AI going to get involved with this? And you've got it, right?
Yeah.
Like you're doing it because that's, because like you can only imagine where that's going to end up, because then it's going to have like dynamic feedback where they can ask the next question based on what I just said. That it's like you and I, you know, we had this conversation. I had some things in my mind, but it takes, I guess, not giving myself credit, but it just takes someone's human brain to come up with like, oh, where do I want to take that next? And if AI can do it, all the better, especially for what you're trying to create. Because if you can't have directors sitting there talking and all day long, it would be too much.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, there's absolutely a market for it. So if someone's going to do this, and obviously it's going to be a range and, you know, it's not about you selling it, but just out of curiosity, if someone were to sign up for something along those lines and pick the product that they would be using, like what is something like that cost if they're going to get involved with it?
So when we launch Life Story would be $99, and it does the life story for a person. I think Love Story is going to be about $99. There's some stuff for work environments that are $49, $69.
Sure.
So yeah, that's the rough price points of what they are in Story Shop for people to play with at the moment. And then platform sales work totally different because we're just bolting into existing platforms for them to add to their existing products and services. So.
Yeah. So very affordable, very doable for a lot of people. And it's impactful. And like, I appreciate this. This has been great.
Yeah.
Where can people learn about you? Where do you want to send them? I know obviously your Orson site and maybe some shows that you've done in the past. And
sure.
Yeah. So where would they go?
HeyOrson.com is our platform site for the underlying technology. StoryShop.ai is where you can touch and play with Orson directly if you're an end user to use it for your own family life. Love any feedback possible because we're looking to train and make things better and as we iterate in all these different use cases. That's the best place. As far as shows go, oh man, I don't even know where to begin on that. That's
go to your IMDb, and just pull it in.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a few in there. You've mentioned a few already, and I mentioned a few with Hogan and all that. So I appreciate this, man. This is
likewise.
Great. And I definitely think that some of the best conversations I've had have been more of the intimate style podcast, right? And that conversations, and even when we've worked with other entrepreneurs, when they're not selling something, when they just talk about something, whatever that is, I don't care what it is, right?
Yeah.
And they have that, I don't know, vulnerability. And it doesn't have to be vulnerability like with tears and all that stuff. It's just like what their true self is. And they go down that path. It's like every single time when they come out of it and they've really done it, they just like, man, that was fun. It's tiring. It's exhausting because you've just unloaded all this stuff and you've shared all these things and you're recorded and there's no phones. There's nothing distracting you. There's something about that, that every single time they're just like, I just enjoyed that so much.
Yeah.
And then they get to listen to that in the future if they want. And they could cringe, right? They might be like, I can't believe I said that. What's wrong with me, Greg? But there's just fun in that when you don't take yourself too serious. So I can only imagine what it would be like to be in your shoes and to have those moments, the live cameras and all that you're doing. And that's awesome. It's awesome. So it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise, man. This is great. You're awesome. Love your show and appreciate being here.
In case you haven't noticed, we love podcasts. In fact, we love building podcasts, everything from development to production. Because of all that, we're building a one-of-a-kind podcast network. If you have a podcast or looking to launch a new podcast, then we should talk. You can message me on Twitter at @Eric_Kaz or hit us up any way that works for you. Let's talk about your podcast joining this one-of-a-kind podcast network.